Blog Talk Radio.
Answer this for me.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Today, we are going to be talking about human envy. Envy is something everyone feels. It seems to be part of the human experience, yet it is an emotion we never want to admit we have, whether to ourselves or to others. Envy is generally seen as an ugly emotion. We are envious that others have accomplished more than we have, envious that our friend gets more dates than we do, envious that other people's children are smarter than ours, envious that others have more money or better things than we do, envious that others are better looking than we are. It doesn't feel good to be envious. It makes us doubt ourselves, judge ourselves, feel inadequate, and feel worthless. So, what good could possibly come out of being envious of others? So, if envious is so desirable, why do we have it? Could it possibly serve a greater purpose in our lives? Believing that envy would not exist unless there was some positive reason for it, my special guest today, Josh Gressel, researched the topic that he discovered every language has a word for. He then compiled the information in the book he wrote, Embracing Envy, Finding the Spiritual Treasure in Our Most Shameful Emotion. Ironically, the people Josh was most envious of in life were those who had accomplished writing books. So in writing Embracing Envy, he lit two candles with one flame. Josh Gressel, PhD, is a clinical psychologist and certified Imago couples therapist in private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area. He is a student of Jewish mysticism and seeks to integrate spiritual and psychological truths in his work with his clients. And now it is time to give a warm welcome to my special guest, Josh Gressel, and meet him. Good morning, Josh. I'm glad you finally called in.
Good morning, Randy. I'm sorry about that. I thought I had the contact information, and I was frantically looking for it, so I spoke to your husband to get it.
Okay, that's great. Well, good morning, and thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on your show.
You're so welcome. So what made you write a book about envy?
Well, you actually started to touch upon it in your introduction. It was really a confluence of a couple of different things. Number one was, as you said, I found myself over a matter of actually decades, not just years, but decades, envious of people who wrote books. Anyone who would say they're working on a book, anyone said they were publishing a book, anyone who was, you know, just you name it, I was envious of anyone remotely connected to the field of authorship. So that was one piece. And then, you know, as a psychologist, I thought, well, I should be able to figure this out. And so I tried to look up. I had this dim awareness that my envy of their doing this meant that I probably wanted to or perhaps even needed to write my own book. But when I looked about, when I tried to look up about envy, the answers I found were either overly academic and didn't really, weren't helpful to me at least in that way, or they were what I would call superficially moralistic. You know, envy is a negative emotion, it's shameful, don't feel it. And, you know, mm-hmm. that wasn't very helpful either. So as you said, lighting, how'd you put that? Lighting two candles with one flame. I thought
with one flame.
Two birds. Yeah. Try to kill two birds with one stone and write a book, get a book published, and also understand envy better. That's kind of how I came to this.
Okay. I mean, it's a topic that really nobody writes about in a, I guess in a philosophical way or a positive way. Nobody really delves into it because we don't want to feel it. We don't want to believe that there is good good envy and bad envy. But there is, right? There is good envy and bad envy.
Well, I'm going to say yes, and there is good envy and bad envy. And the end is, I think there's, in a sense, I'd like to think of all envy as having a positive potential, even the
okay.
most negative of the negative. That, you know, when you stop and think about it, why would we have an emotion like this? And as again, as you said in your introduction, not only is there in every language has a word for it, but it's also throughout all of recorded history, whether you're going back to the Greeks or even to the Bible, the second generation of humans, Cain and Abel. Cain murdered Abel because of his envy. So if this is such a universal human experience, what's the purpose behind it? I mean, if you believe in God, do you think God made a mistake? Or if you want to talk about Mother Nature, I mean, there has to be a reason. There has to be some evolutionary, if you want to call it that, some evolutionary purpose to us feeling envy. And I don't think we can get to it if all we're going to do is feel ashamed of it and refuse to talk about it. So I try to take a more, first of all, an operating position that there's got to be something positive here or we wouldn't have it. And a kind of curiosity, what could it possibly be there for? So I guess I forgot what your question was, but I think I'm trying to answer it.
I was just talking about good envy and bad envy, but you did answer my question.
Okay.
So basically, okay. Envy is there for a purpose. So what is the purpose?
Well, there's a number of different ways that I could try to describe it, and perhaps that's because there's more than one purpose. But let me start by saying that in my mind, envy is not a sign that there's something wrong with you. Envy is a sign that there's something right with you that you're not claiming. So
okay.
In the example of myself, my being envious of authors wasn't a sign that there's something wrong with me. It's a sign that I needed to become an author myself, but I wasn't acting upon that need. That's why I was feeling the envy. So for all those things that we're feeling envious of, my suggestion to your listeners is to take a compassionate stance toward yourself. There's not something wrong with you. There's something right with you that you're not claiming. And then the curiosity that's necessary to follow that lead up and see where it takes you. It'd be nice to say there's always a one-to-one correspondence, like the simple example I just gave about myself and, you know, I'm envious of people who are writing books, therefore I need to write a book. That's very clear. It's not always so clear. So another personal example, I'm using the personal examples not because I love to talk about me, but because I'm trying to role model for people, it's okay to talk about your envy.
Right.
I used to be envious of anyone who was famous, you know, and it was kind of bizarre. I'd be standing in a supermarket checkout line looking at the tabloids, you know, Britney Spears splayed all over, you know, whatever the tabloids are, and I'm envious. And I'm thinking, I don't want to be a pop singer, and I don't want to be a national, you know, a national embarrassment. I don't want to be a butt of late-night TV jokes. I mean, what am I envious of Britney Spears for? What's this about? It didn't make sense to me. It was only in retrospect that I came to understand that my envy of famous people stemmed from my need to become more visible in the world. That I was kind
wow.
of shrinking myself, holding myself back. And the signal I was getting about that was being envious of famous people. So it's not really that I wanted to be famous, but that I needed to become more visible. And now that I've got that, and now that I'm showing up more fully in the world, I'm no longer envious of Britney Spears. You know? So I got rid of that.
Yes, most of us are not envious of Britney Spears anymore. Oh, gosh. Now, what do we do about envy that we really cannot do anything about? I guess it's just a matter of getting in touch and learning to love ourselves. But what if we're, you know, what if we really are physically unattractive and we look at all the attractive people in the world and are envious of that? Is that just about learning to love ourselves?
Well, that's a great question, Randy. I'm going to actually ask you to make it even harder for me, because that question, I think there's still some wiggle room.
Okay.
But what about, you know, because I think physical beauty, we could say, all right, well, actually, let me try to address your question first and then make it harder.
Okay.
I think, you know, we need to really look at, all right, so we're envious of somebody who's better looking. What is it, what's that about? I mean, at the surface level, of course, I wish, and in my case, I wish I had a full head of hair, or, you know, I don't know, a woman might feel, I wish I had a bigger, better figure or different features. What, you know, I'm going to actually ask you to think about this with me. What is it that we're really envious of? What is it that they have that we want? You know, at the surface, okay, we want a better body or we want more hair, but what's the next level beneath that? What would you think?
I don't know. I would have to take some time, but what do you think?
Well, I would say, you know, I thank you for pausing because it gave me a moment to think. I would say that there is something about being wanted. You know, I want to be wanted.
That makes sense.
If we're talking about the physical, I want to be wanted. And then we think, okay, what's that about? Why do I want to be wanted? And so what would the next level be, and how could we find an answer to that that would make us feel, I'm really trying to do this real time now, so I'm not as clear as I'd like to be, but how could we find something that's within our control that would address that need?
Okay.
You know, what steps could we take in our life? I think what I'm really trying to focus on here is how can we answer the need that we're feeling by taking responsibility for a portion of our lives where we're feeling a lack.
Okay, so basically we're talking about some core issue that really isn't related to that, but is manifesting itself in that way, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And taking responsibility over that which we have control. You know, the serenity prayer, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Right.
That there's, you know, when we're feeling this envy, we try to recognize what it's signaling to us, where we need to grow at the deepest level we're capable of, and then we try to take steps to address that.
Okay.
So the example you gave was what I'd call a mid-range difficulty, because it seems to me that in wanting to be wanted, for example, we still have some ability to do something about it. But let's make it even harder. Let's say you want to get pregnant and you're physically unable to get pregnant.
Right.
And you see a woman pushing a stroller with twins, with twin babies.
Right.
Then what? You know, where's my thesis going to go then, that envy is a good thing, that, you know, it's a signal to you that you want something that you can take charge of? What do you do in a situation like that?
Hmm.
That's an open question to you. I don't know. I don't know if you've got any thoughts about it.
Well, the only thing I can come up with is the word acceptance. Because acceptance is something that if we cannot come to, it holds us back from many things in our life. So I think that that's really the foundation of, in that situation, that would be somebody who had not come to terms with their own situation, that they could not change, accepting the things they cannot change. So,
right.
Yes, that's where the Serenity Prayer fits in really well there.
Yeah, I think that's a great answer. It's better than I could have done. I mean, it's something that I'm struggling with, really, because I think probably my book and my thesis deals with the half that we can change, or maybe it's more than half. You know, it's having the courage to think, change the things we can, writing that book or becoming more visible, or all the examples that your listeners might have or that you might have where we really can get off our behinds and do something to improve our lives rather than be envious of others.
Right.
But I do some
counseling, and you know, and acceptance is probably the hardest thing people have, because it's like why aren't I, why isn't this, why, you know, all these kind of whys. Until we come to terms with them, our life will not flow. So I guess that really is related to envy. You used a word that you said you had never heard before, and I definitely had never heard before, Schadenfreude. What is Schadenfreude?
Well, that's a German word, and it means taking joy in another person's pain. So, for example, let's just say your coworker who seems to have everything, you know, she's got the perfect husband, and she's got the perfect kids, and she's got, you know, the perfect house, and they take the perfect vacations, and you find out that her husband's cheating on her, and you take some pleasure in that discovery. That's shocking. Now, I say in the book, I put in a quote there, it's from Steven Pinker, I think, who's an evolutionary neurobiologist or something like that. He says that when Americans hear the word Schadenfreude for the first time, the reaction is not, oh, taking pleasure in another person's misfortune. My language doesn't have a word for that. I don't know that experience. That's not their reaction. Our reaction is, oh, you mean there's a word for it? Cool. Because, you know, we have that experience. We all do, in one form or another, and we've all known this, but we don't really have in our language a word for it like there is in the German. It's the, you know, if we take envy on a continuum, by the way, we also don't have a word for benign envy, you know, like envy, which would be, oh, I envy that new dress you're wearing. That's so beautiful. It looks so good on you. That's using envy kind of as a compliment, really.
Okay.
Let's call it the left side of the continuum, where it's very mild. And there is a word for that in, I believe it's Thai and Polish and Dutch. They have a word for that kind of envy. We don't have a word for that, and we don't have a word at the other extreme, which is Schadenfreude, which the Germans have supplied us with. But I think that level of, let's call it ugliness in envy, I think that corresponds, or maybe it's inversely proportional to the degree that we feel capable of doing something about our situation. Let me try to say that in plainer English. The less I feel I'm able to do something about my situation, you know, that the more impotent I feel, the less I, you know, believe in myself, the more likely I am to have ugly envy. The more I believe in myself, the more I think I'm really capable of doing something about my life, the less I'm going to have that level of Schadenfreude.
Okay. Now, you bring spirituality into this whole thing. And so what comes to mind here is that, because I do a lot of writing and a lot of shows on spirituality, I think really what that comes down to is learning to love each other and understand each other, because we're all part of the same source. And I think that's a goal that if we work towards, we feel less envy about other people, because we understand we're really all having an experience here. That's really what this is about. So that's on a more spiritual note. Now, how do you see this in terms of spirituality?
Well, you know, if it's okay, I I just don't want to turn people off, but I personally am comfortable with the word God, so I use that. I mean, that's
okay.
That's my, you know, spiritual belief system. So
right.
I just don't think God makes mistakes. So if not, you know, as I said at the beginning, why would this emotion exist unless there's a reason for it? And I don't think we're defective, you know, we're not defective human beings. So if I'm feeling this, there's something right going on. I just need to recognize what that is. So I guess my version of trying to say what you said so eloquently about spirituality would be that we're all okay the way we are. We just need to be compassionate toward ourselves in order to better understand ourselves better, in order to evolve into a better version of ourselves. And I think if
exactly.
we take that attitude toward ourselves and toward each other, then as you say, we're going to recognize we're all part of the same fabric.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, I know that that has helped me to be able to compare myself to other people. It really has, you know, the work, the spiritual work that I've done on myself has helped me to not put myself up against other people's, you know, accomplishments and gifts and things like that, because we all have our own. We really do all have our own.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are times that envy can really create problems and can be dangerous. I know that you do talk about that a little bit in your book. How is that so?
If I could just, I just because you just said something that triggered another piece of the spiritual piece
sure.
before we, It's also, the comparison is not such a bad thing. You know, it can be bad if all we do is feel bad about it. But one of the things about envy, one of its primary features, is that we're only going to envy those who are like us in some significant way.
Hmm.
So you, for example, unless you are a tennis player and really aspire to, you know, be a great tennis player, I doubt that you're going to be envious of Serena and Venus Williams.
Right.
Whereas you may be envious of other people who have radio programs, either because they have more listeners or because they get more important guests on the air. You know, you're going to be envious of those you relate to in some
right.
significant way,
okay.
and not somebody that you don't. And again, I think the divine purpose in that is because it's spurring our development. You're going to compare yourself to those who are like you because you want to become a better version, and you need to use something or someone outside yourself as a yardstick by which to measure yourself. So
interesting.
It's not so terrible, the comparison. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to put it. I like that. I like that. Yeah, there's really so many different ways to look at life, you know, philosophically, religiously, spiritually. You know, there's just so many ways that scientifically that we can look at life. You know, somebody is calling in. Let's see if we have a caller that wants to ask a question, okay?
Okay.
Hi, are you calling to ask a question?
Well, I've just been listening for literally like 2 minutes, and so I'm not really sure what has been said prior to that. I just, you know, when you think of envy, and to be honest, I just don't think it's a good trait to embrace. All I've ever seen from envy is, and he's absolutely right, you're going to be envious of people that you relate to, and you're not. So you're not going to be necessarily envious of, you know, the billionaire who you really don't have much in common with. But you'll be envious of friends, of family, of people, you know, you work with or you're around. And all I've seen when it's true envy is a lot of subterfuge, sabotage, and undermining. Because people don't really think deeply about it, and they don't use envy to inspire themselves to become better, but what they tend to do is to try and undermine or reduce the status of the person they're envious of so that they can feel better about themselves.
Right. What is your name? I'm sorry.
Hi, I call myself Miss Lady.
Okay. Miss what?
Lady.
Lady. Okay, Miss Lady. All right, Miss Lady. We did, the purpose of this show really is to change that whole point of view. So I'm going to put you back on hold so you can listen some more, and maybe you can grab onto a different approach of looking at this, okay?
Okay.
Thank you for your call. Okay, Josh, we're back. Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to address what Miss Lady's saying, because I think there's something very important in it, if that's all right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Miss Lady, I guess I would like to say I totally agree with what you're saying, and the purpose of the book is to try to help bring more light into that dynamic, and I think the way to, you know, my idea of the way to do that is to try to look at some of the purpose behind that ugly behavior that you're so accurately describing. Let me also say, while on this piece of it, because, you know, our fear of other people's envy can be a real limiting factor in our development. In other words, if we're afraid, and this happens within families, this happens within communities, you know, our fear of other people's snide comments, or who do you think you are, you're getting too big for your britches, or all those kind of things that we've all heard, and some of us can admit we may have said ourselves, that can be a real detriment, or can be a real break upon our development. So I think it's important to recognize the ways in which we might be holding ourselves back because of our fear of exactly the kind of behavior you're describing.
Okay. I mean, I actually had put her back on hold, but I'm sure, I know she's listening. So that was a really good thing, Josh. I know a lot of people have that point of view, which is really why I chose to do this show, because I always like to show an alternative view that people may not have considered. You know, and this is certainly one. I mean, you know, in your research that this has not been looked at really. So I think this is really important for us to look at this from a different perspective. So what was there anything? Oh, I was asking you how envy can it be dangerous?
Can envy be dangerous? Could you say a little bit more about what you're asking?
I mean, should we fear, you know, there are people that are envious that are not right in their heads and do things due to their envy. How do we deal with that?
Yeah. Well, I think what you're asking, Randy, is kind of where Miss Lady was asking in her question, or what she was pointing out. I want to just back up a bit. I didn't, since you're staying with this, I'll give a little more time to it.
Okay.
In the early 1900s, there were a whole slew, there was the anthropology field, there was a lot of discovery of these remote tribes who were sequestered in villages, you know, cut off from each other by geography, whether Papua New Guinea or in Africa or the rainforest in South America. And what they found upon discovering these various places, these little villages, these isolated hamlets, was pretty much to a place they were all frozen in time. They were backward technologically. They had not developed. I mean, they were like going back 2,000 years. We tend to romanticize some of these kinds of places because we think, oh, our life was simpler there, etc. But the reality is once they were exposed to modern culture, everyone either left those villages or they rapidly modernized. So one of the, you know, they asked, so why did this happen? Why was being cut off? Why did that cause them to stagnate in the way that it did? And one of the answers is that it was within these close communities, the fear of people's envy and their negative reaction, kind of like what Miss Lady was talking about, kept people from trying new things. It would often take, there's the term that's most frequently used in those kind of places is the evil eye, the fear of the evil eye, you know, that it's going to destroy your crops, it's going to destroy, you know, your child's going to die or something like that. So nobody could diverge from the common way of being. So to get to your question, Randy, so what do we do about that? What do we do about when something so negative comes our way? Well, I think the first thing is I find it very helpful to know that it's coming from envy and not from just toxic hostility. So if somebody says something really snide to me and I can actually get that it's coming from envy, I don't feel so defensive anymore. I realize that they actually want something that I have. And so I'm less likely to lash back and more likely to have compassion for them. You know, that, you know,
right.
they're seeing something in me that they want. And that's, I'm flattered.
That's a compliment.
In some way.
Right. That's
yeah.
a flattery.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So that's a good, yeah, that's a good answer. When you were writing this book, what was the most surprising thing you found?
Well, I'm going to give you an answer, and then I'm going to probably qualify it. The first thing I was surprised by was what a fairly clean gender difference there was between the way women responded to my request to be interviewed and men. You know, so I put out ads in different cities, and women would say to me, "That is a great topic, and I would love to talk to you about it." Men would say, they would kind of hem and haw and say, "Well, I'm not sure I really, you know, have ever felt envy, but if you need help, I could probably come up with something to talk to you." So the way I understood that was, at the time, was that women were much more willing to share their sense of vulnerability and feeling less than, and men more needed to appear to be, have it all together, and were less willing. The way I want to qualify that answer now is I've started to think that it might have been because I, as a man, was asking another man to talk about their feelings of envy. A woman might have had an easier time telling a man than a man telling a man, and perhaps if I were a woman, I would have got the reverse. So I'm not sure anymore about that.
Okay.
But
all right, so this
thing,
is not like a scientific...
No, it's not scientific.
Yeah.
This is really anecdotal, and it's simply my experience. But the second thing, and this I should have known this, but I didn't. Until I talked to women about envy, I had no idea how hostile and mean they can be with each other. I thought women were nice. You know, I didn't know that.
Nice to men. They're not nice to each other.
Well, you know, one of the people I interviewed was a former Miss Arkansas, and she said to me, "You know, you want to watch the claws come out. Just mention the word beauty pageant to other women." And she said, "You know, and it's not men don't. You know, we all appreciate the feminine in nature. You know, Mother Nature, beautiful sunsets and forests and things like that. Why can't we appreciate beautiful women? When men do it, but other women, it brings out the envy."
Right. I mean, if you watch the Real Housewives shows, these women tear each other up. I think that's why people watch it, because it's so amazing to see it, really see it. I mean, we feel it, but yeah, every woman knows that it's difficult to deal with other women. I believe me. I know that. But I've learned to understand it, and it's not the way it was. But when we're younger, it's torturous. When we're in school, when we're competing for attention of other boys, it's very, very vicious. So you wrote this book, and now that you can call yourself a writer, are you going to write more?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I feel like it kind of has unplugged me. So I've always wanted to write, and now I've got all these ideas of things I want to write. And my next book, what I wanted to do, and it's got put on hold for any reason, I'll tell you in a second why, was to write about, and this is not going to make sense when I say it first, so I'll explain it, was to write about the role of projection in congregant-clergy relationships. What I mean by that is, if you're in any kind of spiritual community, whether it's mainstream religion or whether it's an ashram or whether it's, is almost everyone has this paradoxical relationship to the guru or the priest or the rabbi. On the one hand, we pedestal them, and on the other, we tear them apart. And I think that this says much, much more about us than it does about them and who they really are. And that's where this concept of projection comes in. So I think all of us need to learn, any of us on a spiritual path need to learn to take more responsibility for our own relationship to the divine, to God, and to stop doing what we do, you know, outsourcing that relationship to our spiritual leaders and then having this kind of complicated relationship with them. That's the book I want to write next.
I totally agree with that. I'm sorry. I totally agree with that thought because, you know, spirituality and our relationship with God or our higher power or the source or whatever is a very personal thing, and we all have to find it on our own. I agree.
Yeah, and it's not like we can't get help along the way, but it gets very, very tricky what we do with those people who are our helpers on the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think we need to bring more consciousness to that relationship, to our helpers.
That's interesting, yeah. That's very interesting. Do you have a website, Josh?
Yes. It's my name, joshgressel.com. That's JOSHGRESSEL, two S's, .com.
Okay, great. Is there anything else you want to tell us?
Oh, that's a broad question. How much time do we have?
Just a few minutes. We're coming down to the end.
All right. You know, I think the thing I would say, and this is my approach, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a big fan of self-help books for a lot of reasons. That's probably the topic of another program because I think books that promise to fix you, I think it's more about marketing than it is about truth. And so my book, the premise of my book, my goal in my book, is more to deepen one's questions than it is to provide answers. That's the approach I take, and I hope that kind of came through in the way I'm talking about this. I don't have all the answers. I don't have an answer. I've grappled with this, and I think I just have deeper questions.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I read your book, and I did find that to be true. Yes, and that's great because it's provocative. It gives us all an opportunity to start thinking about this, and I think that's really important. So, how does your spirituality affect your life? Just in a few minutes.
I
know that you lived
life.
On a kibbutz for a while and that kind of thing. Are you a very spiritual person?
I mean, that's a hard thing for me to quantify. I think all of us are. It's just a question of how many of us are awake to how much we are and how much of the time are we awake to it. I mean, I think that the material world we live in is the illusion, you know, God or the spiritual is the reality, is my personal. But
right.
I walk around sleepwalking like everybody else. I just try to wake myself up periodically.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, I mean, right. You know, to me, once you awaken, I think you're awake. And, you know, you may not tap into it all the time, but I think once you grasp onto something that gives you a sense of love and safety in your life, I think you always have that. Just that, you know, we get caught up in the day-to-day, but I would call you awakened. So I'm gonna label you awakened, Josh.
Well, I thank you for it. You know, I'm thinking about there's the, you know, the story of how the Israelites left Egypt in the Exodus from Egypt, and they crossed the Red Sea, and once they crossed the Red Sea, the waters closed behind them. There's no turning back once you've come out of that narrow place.
Mm-hmm.
The way back is you really can't go back to sleep. Some of us try, but you can't actually go back to sleep once you've kind of seen a broader truth.
No, absolutely. And anyone who listens to my show knows that. I do a lot. I'm trying to really wake up the world, you know, and this is a great aspect for people to think about. but the show is closing. We're running out of time, but I want to thank you so much for sharing your time with us and discussing this interesting, very interesting topic. And the name of Josh's book is Embracing Envy, Finding the Spiritual Treasure in Our Most Shameful Emotion. So thank you, Josh, for being my guest today.
Thank you, Randy, for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Have a great day.
Okay.
Thank you. Unfortunately, our time is up for today, but if you have any comments about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. My website is randygfine.com, and Randy is spelled RANDIGFINE. Don't spell Randy with a Y, it's an I. So my website is loveyourlife@randygfine.com. If you enjoy listening to my shows, go to the show page, click on the follow button, and you will get notices of all the wonderful programming I have. This is a great show with Josh, and I have tons more coming up. And so as they come up, they'll appear on my show page, and if you're a follower, you'll get that. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author Randy Fine signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randygfine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be the change. Be the change. There's a better way.